Chapter 14. The sun had set on Mr. Lambert's office in the palace, the warm evening light fading and candles ignited to life by the clerks finishing their last tasks of the day. Davin sat among them, finishing an audit of a 3-year-old ledger of the palace's laundry expenses. Not exactly the kind of job that got the blood pumping. While the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company was a depressing place, its irascible employees and nefarious deeds had kept it interesting. Music from the evening ball filled the palace, barely discernible from where he and the clerks and underclerks busily scribbled their sums and filed their papers. While the Queen's general clerkship was, to a man, an affable lot, Davin struggled to find common ground with his office mates. They had their clerking stories and tales about family and friends. Davin had one clerking story, a handful of lies, and very little else he could divulge without risking discovery of his identity. Working 10 to 12 hour days, 6 days a week, left little time for excursions to his beloved outdoors, and while the schedule in the office could hardly be called grueling or unpleasant, he often found his concentration floating out the window. The sunshine, mountain valleys and unexplored canyons constantly tried to seduce him away from his desk, and if he couldn't be of any real use to the Queen, he thought seriously of asking for a transfer. Despite his mounting dissatisfaction, Davin did his work the best he could. And as the low man in the office hierarchy, he endured plenty of scrutiny, until Mr. Lambert deemed the newest underclerk competent enough to do the basic but utterly necessary duties. These included audits of minor palace departments, and running up and down the palace collecting purchase receipts from every office and officer that had claims upon the Queen's treasury. The constant errands, while hardly stimulating, at least provided some excuse to uncramp his long legs.
"I say, Mr. Harper!"
Davin glanced up from his ledger and food purchase receipts, finding Mr. Lambert with an excited expression on his face.
"Yes, Mr. Lambert?"
"It is rather astonishing," he said, fumbling with a note in his hand, "but you've been summoned to the Flame Cathedral by Lord Ember himself. This instant. You realise what this means, don't you?"
Davin had an idea, but wondered what Mr. Lambert was thinking. "That Lord Ember wishes to know—"
"That you are to undergo the test," Mr. Lambert butted in. "That's the only explanation. Think of it. You might rise from a clerk at some disreputable establishment to a member of the House of Light."
The test. The opportunity to approach the eternal flame to see if it would choose you to be flame-touched, marked on the palms and endowed with a gift. The thought thrilled him. Few had the privilege of approaching the flame so intimately, and even if it did not select him, the opportunity would be an honour he would remember forever. There was only one downside in his mind. Those chosen by the eternal flame automatically garnered a seat in the House of Light, which the Queen had, during her reign, elevated above the House of Lords in matters of voting. Davin had no desire to enter politics again, if it could be claimed he had entered it at all. As a baron, he had attended the House of Lords but once and tired quickly of the posturing and small-minded infighting. The most innocuous of cases caused lengthy debates about minute particulars, and it drove Davin mad. He had commented to Emile that the real reason nobles had cooks was not because they could not do the work, but that if left to themselves they would starve to death arguing over what to prepare. After that first session at the House of Lords, Davin had launched into a new career as the most notorious in absentia voter the government body had ever seen. He had found reading the arguments and proposals, which tended to be more concise in written form, much more palatable than listening to all the droning that inevitably heaved over into childish attacks and then lulled back to droning. He wondered how the House of Light compared, but wasn't keen on finding out. Still, one did not decline an invitation from Lord Ember or a meeting with the Eternal Flame, and Davin rose, collecting his coat from the rack and the invitation from his employer.
"I shall return as quickly as I can," he assured Mr. Lambert, who was busy informing the other clerks about Davin's appointment.
Not wanting to encounter any of the noble guests currently occupying the main hall, Davin took a back stairway that eventually led out to the gardens. He would walk the long way around the back. As he navigated around the side of the palace, passing statuesque guards at attention, the music faded, easing his mind. He had no pleasant memories of a ball. Balls and melancholy thoughts of his estrangement from his wife walked hand in hand in his mind,
and of the many perks that came from being a commoner, exclusion from balls was a most welcome one. The Flame Cathedral sat opposite the palace on the other side of a circular plaza. A circular pool of water graced the centre of the granite-tiled plaza, a statue of Joris Pulsifer, founder of Bittermarch, rising from its depths. Every evening, members of the House of Light launched little candle boats upon the still waters, little bits of flame defying the dead dark of the pool, a symbol of hope and victory. Their lights reflected off the surface, serene and beautiful. Davin contemplated their movements for a moment before continuing to the lofty cathedral looming ahead of him. Unfriendly to the lame and infirm, the round flame cathedral sat atop a mighty square slab of granite accessible by four sets of steep stairways of the same stone, each rising nearly 20 feet to the entrance. Smooth, slender columns encircled the building proper, and high arched entrances greeted visitors regardless of which of the four sides they chose to ascend. The walls of the building shot some 100 feet into the air, the highest edifice in Bittermarch, and viewable from nearly everywhere in the city and its environs. Davin bounded up the steps two at a time, coming face to face with two cathedral guards by the doors, their long pikes pointed skyward, with pistols tucked in black sashes at their waists. Deep orange stoles with embroidered flames accented their white uniforms, and they regarded him with watchful eyes. "I'm here by request of Lord Ember," Davin announced, extending the parchment containing his invitation. One of the guards took it and perused it. With a nod, he signalled for his companion to open the door, but did not return the letter. "Wait in the antechamber," the guard instructed curtly. As a stranger to the Flame Cathedral, Davin was unsure of what to expect. Given the importance of the Eternal Flame, and in consequence of troubles with Cretus, he was unsurprised to find the antechamber, a room which stretched all the way around the circular cathedral, awash with guards stationed by red-stained doors imprinted with a yellow symbol of the flame. Each door was numbered for identification. The outer doors closed, and the silent hall with its stone floor had a dungeon-like feel in the night, the sparsely placed lanterns hardly adequate to illuminate the vast spaces. Windows built high in the outer wall would fill the room with light by day, but in the evening gloom everything felt heavy and cavernous. He waited, hands behind his back, unsure of what to do. How would Lord Ember find him in the immense building? The flapping of wings turned his head upwards. Up in the dark rafters a bird fluttered about, having chanced an entrance into the building somewhere. It croaked a harsh greeting in the shadows, a crow. If it couldn't escape, it would surely die. Perhaps there was an imperfection in a window, ceiling, or wall that permitted it ingress and egress. If that were the case, more birds might follow. Door 16 to his left opened silently on well-greased hinges. Lord Ember, dressed in a gold-embroidered white ceremonial robe, stepped through, a smile on his face. Like the guards, he wore the orange stole, though his appeared to be of finer cloth, and had a fringe of small tassels along the length of its border. Lord Ember was of average build and in his late 50s. A full head of snowy hair sat atop a round head, aged face, and bright blue eyes, projecting a friendly, gregarious levity.
"Mr. Harper, I presume?" he asked, extending his hand.
Davin noted the flame scar on his palm. He shook it.
"I am, my lord."
"It's very good to meet you, though we've no time for pleasantries at the moment. The Queen wishes the Eternal Flame transported to the palace for the final ceremonies at the ball this evening, so we must be quick. Would you follow me, please?"
Lord Ember led Davin through door 16 and shut it. They stood in a small landing for two staircases heading up to their left and right. Ahead of them was another red door with similar markings to the one they had just passed through. A single lantern hung by it, warm light filling the small space.
"Now, Mr. Harper," Lord Ember began, "in consequence of your actions in connection with the Aid Society plot, the Queen has recommended you for presentation before the Eternal Flame. Even if you are not chosen, seeing the flame up close and in person is an honour in and of itself that should not be scoffed at. The presentation itself is fairly simple, but I wish to prepare you against some things you may find startling, though from the details of the story I've heard, I've no doubt of your courage. First, on the other side of this door is the audience chamber for the House of Light.
There are 5 levels of seating accessible by these stairs. In the centre of the floor is a wide, slightly raised platform. The eternal flame hangs high in the ceiling at night. When you enter, there is a lever you must disengage, and the vessel that contains the flame will come down slowly of its own accord. My next instruction, and one of some discomfort to most being tested, is that you must disrobe before presenting yourself to the flame. I assure you that neither I nor anyone else will be present in the chamber. You should sit before the vessel, legs crossed, with the back of your hands on your knees, palms open. If the flame chooses you, it will brand your palms with the mark you see on mine. It will happen fairly quickly. If you are there longer than a few minutes and the flame does nothing, you have not been selected and may leave. I will wait outside this door for you to return. Any questions about the particulars? Davin had questions, but not about what he was to do. They could wait.
No, I will proceed as you have outlined.
Very well, Mr. Harper, he said, putting a comforting hand on his shoulder. Good luck to you.
Lord Ember left. Davin entered the audience chamber and closed the door, sound echoing through the empty space. A solitary lamp burned on the circular dais Lord Ember had spoken of, beckoning him out of the gloom. High above, a fainter glow from the eternal flame bathed the centre of the ceiling with a warm light. The room smelled earthy, like rocks just after rain, and the lower floor on which he stood was of cobblestone rather than the polished marble of the antechamber, a remnant of the old building the cathedral had replaced. Seating areas, but dimly seen in the poor light, rose 5 high, level upon level, toward the ceiling, each with red-stained chairs behind a stone banister. Davin strode to the light on the platform, senses alive. Such large rooms, while friendly and impressive during the day, inspired a sense of foreboding in the dark. He removed his clothes quickly before he could feel too awkward about it, and finding the lever embedded into a stone post near the edge of the stone platform, tripped it. A gentle clacking sound accompanied the descent of the eternal flame within its vessel. The stories said that Joris Pulsifer had found the eternal flame burning inside a kitchen pot after the Cretesian Parliament had burned his house down with his family inside it. As the flame lowered, Davin could see that it still rested in the same wide soup pot, handles and all. The pot had its fair share of scuffs and scratches, but as it settled onto the ground with a clank, the flame stole his attention. In appearance, it was ordinary, nothing more than a cook fire in a pot, dancing eternally without diminishing or extinguishing. Absent, however, were any sounds of popping or hissing that accompanied a normal fire. And to Davin's amazement, it put forth no smoke or heat as he extended his hand over it. How did it burn the prayers passed into it by Lord Ember or other members of the House of Light? Mystified, he sat cross-legged as he was instructed, placing his palms outward and waiting, entranced by the flame. And it came. Like a strange creature of fire, the flickering tongues of flame bent toward the rim of the pot and grasped it, pulling itself onto and then over the edge. It fell soundlessly to the floor, where the tongues moved like blind fingers, grasping the grooves in the cobblestones and pulling the entire flaming mass forward in a patient tongue-over-tongue march toward its destination. Once it reached his legs, it stopped for a moment and adjusted itself upright. Davin's heart pounded. He had expected something dumb and elemental, but the eternal flame moved like an animal and exuded an impression of sentient simplicity. 3 of the tongues of flame rose and stretched, elongating and thinning. 2 bent toward his open hands, the 3rd travelling toward his chest. Over his hands the threads of light hovered, still flickering and wavering as if tickled by a breeze, while the 3rd traced the scar lines of the saber cat, almost as if reading them in an attempt to comprehend. Abruptly the 3 tendrils withdrew a space, and then 2 shot forward. Pain coursed through Davin's hands as the eternal flame etched its marks into his palms. Light exploded into his mind, immersing it, casting out darkness and relieving him of any weight of consciousness. Moments later he came to his senses, finding himself sideways on the cold stones. The eternal flame had retreated. A single blade of flame hooked around the rim of the pot and pulled the rest inside. He expected the marks on his palms, a single flame, to sting as a fresh burn would, but his hands felt whole. In appearance, the eternal flame's brands were light, like old scars, and about the size of the pad of his thumb. He was flame-touched. He would receive a gift. His heart beat hard for a moment, anxious and excited at the same time. In all his years, he had never thought to be presented to the flame, much less chosen. But what would it gift him? Remembering his nakedness and feeling a chill bump his skin for the first time since entering, he donned his clothes hastily. The eternal flame flickered in its pot, now ordinary save for the differences he had noted earlier. Historians taught that the flame had visited Joris before the Cretesian Parliament had burned his home. Had it crawled to him as Davin had seen, or had Joris seen it in a vision? Davin returned to the antechamber, finding Lord Ember there waiting, with a young man attending him.
"Well?" he asked, eyes smiling.
Davin presented his palms.
"Welcome, brother!" Lord Ember extended his hand and Davin shook it. "Now, young Martis," he said to his attendant, "go prepare the eternal flame for transport to the palace. I will come for it after I explain a few things to the newest member of the House of Light. Walk with me, Mr. Harper."
"May I ask a question before you begin, Lord Ember?"
"Of course," he answered, smiling.
"What am I to expect with respect to the gift? I've heard of the Queen's discernment, and tales of long life, and even a heightened intelligence. Are they common gifts? And when are they bestowed?"
"There are a multiplicity of gifts, to be sure, that heighten physical, spiritual, and mental faculties. Those most common are the ones we associate symbolically with light, such as an increased ability to understand, the discernment you mentioned, and even increased intuition. But there are those members of our order blessed with long life, or perfect health, or even increased quickness and a fine dexterity. My gift is one of a perfect memory. In short, gifts of the eternal flame tend to take some aspect of who we are, and elevate it to perfection. As for the timing of the gift's manifestation, it usually comes gradually within the space of a few days. Now, you likely know that the House of Light is also a governing body of Bittermarch. Our bylaws and responsibilities can be found in the library, accessible through door 27. There you may also find histories and studies that will satisfy questions from the most pedestrian to the most arcane. We do vote on matters of state, but there is no in absentia voting. If you are not here, you do not have the privilege of voting. Participation is not forced. Not all of our members have the mind, will, or desire to entangle themselves in political manoeuvring."
Davin couldn't conceal a smile. This was good news indeed.
"I see this pleases you," Lord Ember grinned. "You are certainly not the first. There are those in the House of Light I have not seen since the ceremony, and others I wish I would see less. From reports of your deeds at the Boot and Wheel Caravan Company, you have a keen mind and deep reservoir of persistence and courage. So I hope you do come when important matters are at stake. Can I count on you?"
"I'll just be across the way if you should need me for anything urgent,"
Davin replied noncommittally. It would need to be dreadfully important to drag him into some frothing debate. He'd rather grab a sabre cat by its fangs.
"Two more points, and I shall release you for the evening. First, there are in the House of Light women, and even a few children who have been marked. As such, we do not carry on in some of the more disgraceful habits of the House of Lords, such as smoking, cursing, or other bawdy talk. Second, if you are an ambitious man, there are positions you may aspire to within our order, such as treasurer, house guard, house steward, and so forth. We even have our own clerks, if the Queen ever granted you a transfer. Of course, you'll need at least a year or two as a member, and to know the House of Light inside and out before you could reasonably expect to tender your candidacy for any of these positions. The House votes on officers the evening before the Day of Burning celebration."
Davin was extraordinarily pleased with his luck. The House of Light was so voluntary that he could enjoy his gifts without any of the bureaucratic nonsense he had feared his selection would subject him to.
"I thank you for your good information, and I will consider everything you have said."
"Very good," Lord Ember said.
In his bemused countenance, Davin thought he could detect an understanding that the newest member of the House of Light
might be one of the more invisible members of the Order.
Ah, but I forget. Once you have your gift, please come in and have it recorded for our history. The clerk's offices are behind door number 21. And to be forthright, the Queen has asked me to report on what happened here tonight. Is that agreeable to you?
Of course, Davin said. They stopped by one of the arched doorways leading to the outside. Davin couldn't be sure which. He bowed.
Good evening, Lord Ember.
Lord Ember nodded in return.
Burn brightly, my brother.